It's time for our weekly check-in on the top news here in Wisconsin. WPR News Director Michael Leland joins us. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Happy 4th.
Well, we've got happy holidays to you, too.
Well, thanks.
Before I continue. The Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court now, has been up to a lot in the last couple of weeks. Hobby Lobbies and high-tech rulings, search and seizure, all that. There's one ruling, I think it was last week, but it has an echo in Wisconsin this week, the buffer zone.
Right,
so what's
the buffer zone. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court passed this law that basically struck down a 35-foot buffer zone that Massachusetts had created around people attending, going to abortion clinics and women's clinics. The court majority said that that law violated First Amendment rights. So this week in Madison, the city said it would stop enforcing a law that created a buffer zone in Madison around healthcare facilities. That law was designed to protect patients and staff from protesters, especially outside the Planned Parenthood clinic, which is the sole abortion provider in Madison.
And how did Madison's buffer zone law compare to what was just struck down in Massachusetts?
A little bit different. In Madison, the ordinance creates a 100-foot buffer zone around healthcare facilities. And then if you imagine within that zone, I mean, you can go into that zone without any problem, but within that zone, a protester, for example, could not approach within 8 feet of another person to either speak to them or hand them pamphlets or whatever without their permission. So at first, Madison officials said, well, our zone is not the same as Massachusetts, so this doesn't really apply to us. But then this week, the city attorney said the ruling does raise significant concerns about how valid Madison's buffer zone is.
I think Gilman Halstead, our reporter, mentioned that some people call the Madison version a bubble zone because it creates a bubble around individuals within this wider zone.
Exactly. Once you're in that zone, they imagine this 8-foot bubble around you and no one can come inside that bubble without your permission.
So the city is what, going to completely stop enforcing this, or are they kind of picking and choosing what sticks around?
It'll be part. They will not enforce parts of the ordinance that a state established that sort of bubble zone, buffer zone, but it will continue enforcing parts of the ordinance that prevent people from physically blocking others from entering a facility.
And what's ahead? I assume this is something that local government in this case would revisit and try to maybe continue part or all of the law, but more in compliance with what seems to be coming from the Supreme Court.
Of course, the alder who supports this law, the lead supporter of this, says that they will work with the city attorney to see if there are ways of changing the current law to make it fit the Supreme Court's ruling rather than just flat out repealing it. But of course, the law has its critics as well, and a group called Alliance Defending Freedom has been challenging Madison's law, and it says the city should just go ahead and repeal it now.
Okay, so this is something conceivably that could move up through the courts in its current form or whatever the city goes on to do in the future.
Yeah, this will not be the last of it, for sure.
All right, and then a new test run for food share in Wisconsin. This is one I'm not as familiar with. What's going on there?
So as of this past Tuesday, July 1st, people who live in Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties who receive food share, that's food stamps, will have to be working or going to school to continue getting that that benefit. These three counties are test sites this year for Wisconsin. The new requirements will go statewide next year. The Department of Health Services in Wisconsin says it chose these counties because they say the counties are a good representation of the state. They're a good mix of rural and urban areas and have a moderate caseload level.
And where's this change coming from? A change in state requirements or the feds, or who's behind
this
that?
This is actually several years old. The change was mandated by the federal government several years ago, but the state has gotten a waiver for the past few years. But then this past year, they were included in Governor Walker's budget. And again, starting with these three counties now, then in January going statewide.
And is this every single person currently receiving food stamps, food share, or just a part of the population?
Yeah, a lot of people, but not everyone. The requirement affects adults between the ages of 18 and 49 who have no minor children living with them and who are able to work. So that amounts to about 5,000 people during this pilot phase for the rest of the year, and it expands to about 60,000 people as of January.
And what's been the reaction since the federal government imposed these guidelines and now that the state is catching up with them?
Yeah, anti-hunger advocates are among the critics. The head of Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee says this program will face a big test in January when it expands into Milwaukee. They're predicting that it's going to be challenging for groups like theirs, as well as food pantries and homeless shelters, as the demand for those services could go up as possibly tens of thousands, as we mentioned, as many as 60,000 people statewide could lose their food stamp benefits. Now, some of them obviously will choose to either go to school or find some work to protect their benefits. And the state's Department of Workforce Development says it'll work with them. But inevitably, there will be some people who will lose their food stamp benefits next year.
And is the Department of Workforce Development going to try to connect people with jobs where possible with educational opportunities where jobs aren't available?
I think especially on the jobs end, they will try to look mm-hmm. for some kind of employment. And there may be other ways to, you know, to get people into, technical schools or community college or something like that. Again, just to see what options might be available. And some people will pursue those avenues. Some will find it difficult, and some may just flat out choose not to.
Hmm. Well, interesting. I'm sure we'll be following that as the test program comes in, and then the full state comes in next
year,
you said?
In January, yeah.
Okay. Well, we had some rough weather this week. There was one day here in Vilas Hall where we were thinking, are we going to need to, run a reel of tape and go to the basement or something? This was a big deal. I keep seeing press releases from the governor over this last couple of weeks. Governor Tour's latest storm day. Damage.
Yeah, he was on the storm damage tour this week. We had really, if you think about it, three rounds of severe weather across the southern part of the state. If you start on Saturday night and going through Tuesday night, people in the La Crosse area will remember you had thunderstorms and strong winds knocking out power to a lot of people and damaging buildings and trees. The governor toured that area earlier this week. And then, of course, Sunday night, it got worse. The National Weather Service says there were three tornadoes in Iowa and Dane counties. The ones in Iowa County were classified as what's called EF2, which generally is winds between 100 and 135 miles an hour. Those were both just a few miles north of Dodgeville, and they damaged some homes and farm buildings. And then later that evening, there was an EF1 twister. That's a little bit milder, but still a storm you don't want to be outside in. That's about 85 to 110 miles an hour winds. And that hit just outside of the town of Oregon in Dane County, and it damaged a number of trees and some farm fields.
And just when we started thinking, glad that weekend's done in the state, we got more.
Right. There was Monday afternoon and evening, and this is what you were just mentioning. This hit late in the afternoon. More severe weather, thunderstorms, high winds, 60 to 70 miles an hour in some places. A lot of reports of trees down, farm fields, crops damaged. There were tornado warnings. No actual tornadoes touched down on Monday that the Weather Service was able to confirm. A lot of people lost power, though. More than 130,000 customers lost power at some point in that storm. And in southeast Wisconsin, some of the customers of We Energies were just getting their power restored Wednesday evening, so nearly 2 days after the storm hit. Some of the tougher to restore homes were still in the process of getting their power back.
A rough week, but as they say, it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. Yeah, there were no injuries that were reported. Certainly no deaths. And, there was damage to buildings, but, there were no, homes completely destroyed or anything like that. But, a scary few days of weather. But yeah, you're right.
Knocking on wood.
Exactly.
Well, let's look ahead to after the holiday weekend. We've talked to Senator Ron Johnson about his ongoing legal challenge to part of the Affordable Care Act. And there's some news coming up on that.
Right. This is a lawsuit he filed back in January is going to get a hearing on Monday morning in Green Bay. A judge is going to determine whether Senator Johnson will have any legal standing to sue the federal government over part of the Affordable Care Act. Now, a little bit of backstory here. Back in January, the senator challenged part of the Affordable Care Act that allows the federal government to pay about 70% of the health care premiums for members of Congress and their staffs. Now, that's the same arrangement that's already in place for most federal government workers. But the senator says it's unfair to taxpayers in general because most members of Congress and people who work for them earn too much money to otherwise qualify for subsidies under the new Affordable Care Act.
And this is a legal challenge. What's been some of the political reaction to Senator Johnson's suit since he first filed it?
Well, a number of senators, a few dozen, have signed a legal brief supporting it, but not everybody thinks it's a great idea. Congressman James Sensenbrenner in Wisconsin back in January call this an unfortunate political stunt.
This is a fellow Republican.
Exactly. He said it's common for employers to help pay for health care coverage and that if the subsidy stopped, it could actually hurt Congress. He says it could cause some longtime congressional staffers to leave to look for other jobs, and that could hurt a lot of the institutional knowledge and the work that gets done in congressional offices.
Now, Senator Johnson is generally opposed to the Affordable Care Act. He makes no secret
exactly.
of that.
Right.
This particular challenge, it doesn't sound like it's something that's going to blow the whole thing up. It's just a piece
Probably
of the puzzle.
Probably not. It's just you know, picking away at this one part of it that you know, that he has particular problems with. You know, legal scholars are saying it's a long shot that he'll be given standing to sue the government. They're saying that he has to prove that he's been personally harmed by the administration's actions. You know, he says he has. It'll be up to the judge to decide, you know where he's going to come down on that.
You've got fronts coming in from the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. You get some interesting political tornadoes coming out of those.
Exactly, exactly. Nice weather metaphor, Jim.
Thank you, thank you. Well, have a good holiday weekend, Michael.
Thanks, you too.
That was WPR News Director Michael Leland. We check in on the top ongoing stories in Wisconsin every Friday at this time, even on holidays. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.